Today's readings take us on a journey between fear and blessing. God says to Abraham, "Do not be afraid." And Jesus looks forward to a time when people can see him as he is. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. All human life is contained between these, really. But sometimes, blessings can be so well disguised that they feel like curses. Sometimes what looks like a solution to a problem can turn out to be more a curse than a blessing. We are to be wary and alert, as both Abraham and Jesus show us. Abraham, it's fair to say in our first reading, is feeling very short-changed by God. God has promised him his heart's desire, wealth and progeny. It has to be said that God has come very good on the wealth and security part of the promise. But Abraham's heart is not fixed on wealth, it's fixed on family, on people to hand it on to. Family who will look after them in their old age. Servants are not the same. And Abraham hammers the point home. You have given me no children. God has promised. And look how old Abraham and Sarai are, and still childless. In their place too, we would behave like those little ones, hanging on to a promise, which from our point of view at least, had been inadequately fulfilled. But you promised. We can hear our five-year-old voices, can't we? We lose faith if a promise isn't fulfilled for too long. We've heard of that before. Really? You expect me to fall for it again? Why should I believe you this time? Such is God's love for Abraham that he lets Abraham corner him. He doesn't have to. He's God, after all. But God lets Abraham hand his problem over with all the painful feelings attached, the disappointment, the anger, the blame. Now, we might expect any self-respecting God of the Old Testament to show anger and power and the equivalent of fireworks to his faithful. For instance, can we imagine God willingly submitting to his worshippers? All the other relationships with gods were strictly top-down and need-to-know. But Abraham's God puts himself at the mercy of a human being. Abraham's God takes a vow of life or death. His life and death. He cuts a covenant. He gets Abraham to set up this grisly corridor of blood and slaughtered animals and to protect it from the predators. This ceremony of cutting a covenant bound the one passing between the carcasses to give their life in a similar way if they did not fulfill to that covenant. It made the promise to remain true or to die very real. It has to be said, in some ways, it was a sort of statute of limitation, as well as to our ears being completely grim. It was a sort of statute of limitation because retaliation for unfulfilled promises could go on and accelerate between people, between families and generations. So this ceremony, although it called for the death of the one who did not keep the covenant, was limited in its way. But in the smoke and the flame of the fire pot and the torch, passing between the pieces, God binds God's self in exactly that way, while exempting Abraham, who slept an uneasy sleep, during that thick and dreadful darkness. God does not commit us to die for him when we get things wrong. But he does commit to dying for us without ifs or buts or maybes. And knowing that we can and never will prove faithful, God does it anyway. It's a completely one-sided covenant. When the party with the ultimate power gives it all away, while the other one sleeps. That might remind us of the Garden of Gethsemane, with Jesus in prayer and the disciples asleep. And that thick and dreadful darkness which came over Abraham may perhaps foreshadow the darkness of the crucifixion. How could the outside world not be very dark indeed, reflecting, echoing our inner world when we contemplate the death of God? We commit to looking at the dark side of ourselves and the world, you know, inasmuch as it's appropriate for to do so at this particular time, because there are times when it would harm us more to do that. But we are to remember God's words to his beloved Abraham: do not be afraid. Our journey in Lent is to recognise some of the things which trap us, which prevent us from seeing God's true and loving nature in Jesus. And our task is to let them go. And that, of course, is the blessing which Lent holds for us. So we might just sit in a moment of quiet and ponder whatever we feel is perhaps holding us back. We might acknowledge it and let it go. Such is the purpose and work of Lent. It may be that we find ourselves freed from what we have always considered obligations, but perhaps they are just self-imposed guilt and penance. Those can hold us back, stop us being the people who we most truly are, but they can also prevent us from meeting our Maker as fully as we might, which seems a shame. Lord, help us to be aware of what we allow to get in the way of meeting you. Help us not only to be aware of it, but to let it go, to put it in your hands.